I'm Michelle Olivier, and you're listening to Hey, I Want Your Job, the podcast that looks at amazing jobs and what it takes to get them. Hey, and welcome to Hey, I Want Your Job. Today, I am talking to Charlie Cook, who has a couple of jobs, neither of which I have ever given any thought to having, but I am excited to learn about all of them. So, Charlie, thank you so much for joining me today. So let's start with, after that somewhat ambiguous introduction, what is your job title?
Well, thanks, Michelle. My job title is I am a firearm instructor. And I have a couple of YouTube channels, so I feel like a little bit of a YouTube junkie.
You are a YouTube junkie, but you're also a Second Amendment activist, right? Like you're a big deal on the speaking circuit. And I know you would probably not self-describe as a big deal, but you have had multiple speaking engagements on that front, and you're a part of that community for sure, right?
Absolutely. I've had the opportunity to speak at conferences around the country. I've had the opportunity to MC some concealed carry fashion shows around the country. And a couple years ago, I gave an impromptu speech on the Supreme Court steps in place of Ted Cruz.
Was he in Cancun again?
He was not in Cancun. There was an angry mob that was there was an angry mob on the Supreme Court steps, and they were I don't know what they were doing. They were angry and chanting and screaming and shouting. And when our turn came, they just kind of came over into our area. And so there was a lot of screaming and shouting and people standing in front of each other and a lot of, middle fingers and a lot of FUs and all this sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. So a friend of mine came over and she said, "Hey, listen, I need to talk to you." And I was right down front trying to get some video. And she's like, "I need to talk to you." I said, "Oh, what's going on?" She's like, "Ted Cruz isn't going to speak." I'm like, "Oh man." She's like, "You're taking a spot. You're on in 2 minutes. Let's go."
I have to say,
no pressure.
20 seconds into this interview, I would vote for you over Ted Cruz as a citizen of the state of Texas already. I'm in.
Oh my gosh. That's
I get awesome. To take the piss because I am a citizen of the state of Texas. You'd be surprised to learn I did not vote for him in the last election. I have a feeling that as our conversation goes forward, that'll be increasingly obvious. He's not my guy. He's just, Ted.
That's all right. That's all right.
So you're a firearms instructor, which means that you're not what the media would tell us is a gun nut, right? You're somebody who believes in firearm safety. So talk to me first and foremost about firearm safety. What does responsible and safe gun owning in a home look like?
All right. Well, I'm in Massachusetts, and in Massachusetts, we have to have a permit before we can purchase or possess any type of firearm or any type of ammunition. Massachusetts is a lot screwy in that front. We used to have 3.5 types of firearms licenses. We had one that was for pepper spray only. We were the only state that had a license, which you had to have government permission in order to have a spice.
Well, there you go.
That's a little extreme
even to me. I'm with you.
We had a firearms identification card, which allowed you to have non-large capacity rifles and shotguns. Then we had a license to carry, which allowed you to have large capacity rifles and shotguns and non-large capacity handguns. And we did get rid of that one a few years ago. And then we have the license to carry, which allows you to have large capacity rifles, shotguns, and handguns. And a license to carry without any restrictions or no restrictions means you can carry a concealed firearm on your body when you're out and about and at the store and at the movies and going on with your life. I didn't grow up as a gun guy. I grew up as, I grew up as a chubby kid that played the trombone, and I wanted to be a musician, and I wanted to be the lead trombone player for Kiss.
Well, you would have been the lead, because you definitely would have been the only one.
Right, but I wasn't smart enough to realize that Kiss didn't have a horn section, you know?
I mean, so, they could have. I feel like, pitch it right to Gene Simmons. He might be in, you don't know.
That would be very cool. That would be a cool gig. So the first part of my life, I spent as a gigging musician, and I spent 25 years being a band teacher, and I traveled up and down the East Coast with one band, and we opened up for Dolly Parton at Pigeon Forge one time, and then I ended up moving to Boston, and I played with another band, and we had the opportunity to play for the governor of New Hampshire a couple times. We played for, we opened up for Ray Charles one time. I think we opened up for Earth, Wind, and Fire, but by the time we opened up for Earth, Wind, and Fire, I don't want to say I really didn't care. I knew that we weren't going to be able to hang out with these guys. So I'm like, okay, we're sitting in a room in a convention center. We can't go hear them. We can't hang out with them. Who cares? This doesn't mean anything. Yeah.
How did you get from that to firearms? Is this like there was a gateway drug moment? Like, I've got tattoos. People talk about ink that way. Like, oh, you get your first tattoo, and the next thing you know, head to toe, ink.
Right? Not quite. So I got a tattoo when I was 21, and then I got my next tattoo when I was 45. And then when my daughter turned 18, she's like, Dad, I think we should get matching tattoos. So when she turned 18, she asked me when she was 17. So I'm like, yeah, sure, whatever, you know. And then when she turned 18, she's like, okay, Dad, I'm 18. Let's go get matching tattoos. I'm like, okay, let's do it.
Hey, that is, I think, probably some of the highest praise a dad can possibly get from a 17 or 18-year-old, that I like you enough that I want matching tattoos. Like, at 17 or 18, there would have been no way in hell I would have suggested that to my father. I'd have been
oh
like,
oh my God. So this is cool and possibly on the verge of creepy. It's not as creepy as it could be, okay? So when my daughter was young, I used to rock her to sleep and I would sing the Platter song, Daddy's Little Girl.
Okay.
So my daughter got into music. She played music in school. You know, she played an instrument. She took up singing. She's in the show choir. So when it was time to think about a tattoo, I'm like, oh my gosh, what do we get? Like, it has to be something we agree on. So we agreed to get the sheet music of the melody for Daddy's Little Girl. And I'm like, because if I just tattooed Daddy's Little Girl on my daughter's ankle, she would end up on the stripper pole.
Yeah.
No, that's a no-go. Yeah. Right. So we have this tattoo on the inside of our ankles of the sheet music for the melody of Daddy's Little Girl. You know, just a couple of bars. So
I think that's really sweet. I love that.
Yeah,
love
it that. It is cool.
Mine are mostly floral. So I've got some orchids here. I've got a lotus on my ankle and I've got a turtle on the other ankle. So three flowers and a creature. My children are absolutely fascinated by them. They're like, Mama, you're wearing your flowers again, Mama. I'm like, here's the thing, buddy. Every day, without fail, Mommy is going to be wearing her flowers. That's how these work.
So, some people say diamonds are forever, but you can lose a diamond.
Yeah, you can't lose ink.
Right. So how does being a musician get into being gun stuff?
Yeah.
On September 11th, all of our lives were changed in some way or another. And I was teaching at an elementary school, a fourth and fifth grade school. And we sat and watched everything go down, you know, and that was picture day in our school that day. And they were doing pictures in the band room. So my lessons were canceled and I sat in the teacher's room and watched everything unfold. After that, we had a meeting with our principal and he said, listen, if somebody gets in the school that's not supposed to be here, he's going to say, get on the intercom and say that the eagle has landed. And that meant we were supposed to lock our doors and hide under our desks. And I sat in the teacher's room with a bunch of liberal Democrat teachers. And I was 30 and I really wasn't paying, you know, I didn't pay much attention to politics. I played in a band still. I was married. I had a son. Mm-hmm. And I sat there and I said, you know, if the teacher's on the first floor, like I'm in my classroom, I didn't have desks. So we're a music room. We got chairs,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I sat in the room with the teachers and I said, hey, listen, if the teachers on the first floor all had a gun, they could shoot the bad guy. And the teachers on the second floor can keep on teaching. We'll need half the grief counseling and half the, you know, all of that stuff. And they all looked at me and they're like, that's a little crazy. And I was like, I don't think so.
Okay.
So my wife and I went and pursued getting our gun license and never fired a gun before, never anything. And we got our gun licenses. I became a card-carrying NRA member, so I had a subscription to the NRA magazine. And I remember calling up my mom and saying, you know, this gun stuff is kind of cool. I think I want to get into this. And this is a year after having a gun license. And she said, well, why don't you come out to the Midwest and get your father's guns? And I'm like, I didn't know we had any guns in the house. So I drove out to the Midwest. I brought back a couple shotguns and a couple handguns. I joined a local shooting club and I started hanging out at the shooting range. And honestly, shooting is just a lot of fun. The first time I took a class and ended up firing a gun, I remember looking at the instructor and being like, this is really cool. Do other people know about this? Because everybody should be doing this.
See, you say that, but my husband is English. And obviously, guns are a very different situation over there. And but his best friend is a marksman. And so he has guns that live at the ranges there where he goes and shoots. So when he comes over, the first thing he wants to do is go to the range. And I've been with him a couple times. And I have to say, oh, this is so much fun. It's not my experience. I do not
really suffer
from PTSD, but like I go in there and I do want to like curl up in a little ball in the corner. The noise, even with the protective ear things on, all of that is insane. Inevitably we go and somebody's got like a larger caliber something that they're firing in the indoor range, and it's just like boom, 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 boom. Like, and I can't. Like last time we went, I literally had to leave before they were done because I was like, my anxiety was just through the roof.
Wow.
I'm not a crazy person about it, right? Like, I don't think I'm in danger. I don't think anybody's going to shoot a gun at me. I don't think guns are evil. None of that. It is just literally like something about that noise, like the level of it in an indoor range. And people have said, go to an outdoor range.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Yes.
So I'm going to push it a little further. Back in England, from what I understand, it is it's common courtesy to shoot a gun with a suppressor on it, which silences the noise, or a lot of times here we call them silencers. And here in the United States, a lot of people think the silencers make you some sort of murderer. And the anti-gun folks like to say, well, you know, if you have a silencer on the gun, you're just going to go around killing people and no one's know they're going to get shot until the bullet hits them. You know what? It's really the nice thing to do for your neighbors.
Well, and so, yes, but we cannot control the other people in the gun range. So,
This is true.
And so that's...
Everybody should have suppressors. They should be Oprah. You get a suppressor. You get a suppressor. Everyone gets a suppressor.
I do not, and I don't like, there was just nothing about the experience that I was like, yeah, I hear people talk about, you feel like it's a kind of an adrenaline rush of doing it, that they enjoyed the skill of it. I feel none of these things. None of these things do I feel.
Okay. All right.
I understand that I feel these things about things that other people do not as well. So, right, like it goes both ways. Like, I'm not judging the choices. I'm just saying that it is not for me, my friends. Not for want of trying. Again, grew up in Texas. Many firearms.
That's
not
America.
Like, So on that kind of note of what everybody thinks they know about things like silencers and that kind of stuff, what is it that people get kind of most often? What does the media get wrong about the kind of work that you do, about firearm education and safety and that sort of thing?
Well, first of all, what the media gets wrong about firearms is everything.
Well, they get the part about the bullet. And the dangerous object. Like, they are dangerous. There is a bullet. Like, they get that part right.
Sure. But there's danger to everything else that we have, too. There's danger to cars. There's danger to having kitchen knives. There's danger to walking on the street. There's danger to skiing. There's danger to riding a motorcycle, skydiving. I mean, there's certainly a danger to it. And you do have to learn how to be safe with a firearm. And we have three safety rules. Always keep a gun in a safe direction. Always keep your finger off the trigger until you're ready to shoot it. And always keep it unloaded until you're ready to use it. And if we have people that abide by these rules, then we can eliminate all of the firearms accidents that we have. And a lot of the accidents come down to ignorance and carelessness. Somebody doesn't know what they're doing. They don't know how to operate a gun. They don't know to check to see if it's loaded or unloaded. They don't know if it has a safety on it, if you push the safety up or down. Carelessness is leaving a gun someplace where someone has access to it that shouldn't have access to it. It's leaving a gun in your house where your kids can get to it and your kids don't know how to handle a firearm. There was a story a few years ago about a woman that had a gun in her purse. The two-year-old starts digging through the purse. The gun wasn't in a holster. It was just in her purse, and the gun goes off and shoots and killed the mother in the store. So it's that sort of stuff that I don't want to say that the media gets wrong, but that's the stuff that they sensationalize, and that's the stuff that they want to promote, because I do think the media is very anti-gun. What I think is really interesting, and I try to point this out in the classes that I teach, is that the people that don't know much about firearms, when they hear the term semi-automatic, they start to think that it's fully automatic. And why would someone want to have a fully automatic firearm? Mm-hmm. The answer for that is because it's fun to shoot. But if the government really thought that semi-automatic firearms were not good, they wouldn't give them to the police when the police go to work. And the firearms that the military carry, the rifles are usually machine guns, which means they're fully automatic, and the handguns are semi-automatic. That's what they think that people need to use to protect themselves. So it's kind of one of those things. They don't get all of that right, and I do think the media likes to feed that. I think they like to feed that guns are evil and dangerous, and only crazy people use guns. And as a gun guy, I know that crazy people use knives, but it really is a lot of fun.
And I get that. Like, I totally understand it as a skill, as a sport, and as a hobby. All of those things, I totally understand. But you probably saw my face as you were telling me the story of the two-year-old with the gun. And I have a two-year-old. And so, like, as a mom, I just, like, my heart stops at the idea of that. And I think that's what terrifies me, right? I live in Texas. Bitches be loca, right? So, like, people do weird shit. I see on my Facebook, on my Nextdoor app all the time, people are like, I keep a loaded gun in my nightstand, and if you try to break into my house, I'm going to shoot you in the face. Like, this is on the regular. And so my concern as a mama is my kids don't know what the hell a gun, like, they have no engagement. 2 years old is not an appropriate age for them to know how to handle a handgun. And so they go into Bob McCrazy's house. Bob McCrazy, should they be in the bedroom? No. Do two-year-olds go where they shouldn't go? Yes. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, and, absolutely.
Like, that is what terrifies me. So I think that is where some of the fear comes from, is because we have people who make sad choices with their firearms. And so I guess as an instructor, as somebody who is much more liberal in his thoughts about what your rights and privileges should be with regards to firearms, how do you respond to that? Like, what is your thought? Should there be rules about how you have to maintain them in your home, or what do you think?
Woo, I love this question. So it is the two causes for firearms accidents are carelessness and ignorance. If someone comes over to my house, I keep everything locked and secured. Mm-hmm. I keep my carry gun. I don't want to say I keep it unlocked, but I keep it less secure. Mm-hmm. I know that sounds a little weird, but that gun
carrying
is something
it,
that I,
you, you
work. Yeah, I mean, I put it on every day when I head out of my apartment. And when I go to bed, I take it off. If you come over to my house on a Saturday afternoon and I'm taking a nap on the couch watching a movie, I've got a gun on me. If you come over on a Monday evening for dinner, I've got a gun on me. And it's just as a guy that's a gun instructor and a bit of an activist, I've decided a few years ago, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this. And this is what I'm going to do. So everything, I don't want the government to come in and say, you have to keep your guns secure, because the progression that the government would take, or the downward spiral, is you need to keep your guns locked and secured. We want to come in and check them. Now, this is a Fourth Amendment illegal search and seizure. So we're going to go in your house and we're going to say, you don't have your guns properly locked up. You need to spend $1,000 on a gun safe. Oh, you don't have $1,000? Well, you can't have guns then. It's and then some states, is, this is something that some people are pushing for gun owners to have insurance in case someone steals their guns and goes and commits a crime with it. Well, I don't know how I'm responsible for something like that. If someone breaks into my house and steals my guns, I keep everything locked up. The only gun that's not locked up is my carry gun because it's on me. And if I'm not home and somebody breaks in and steals my stuff and goes and commits a crime with it, I really don't know how I can be responsible for that. But some folks want us to have insurance so that I would have to pay for the insurance for someone that steals my guns and goes and commits a crime for it. That's crazy talk.
I'm going to interrupt for 2 seconds because all the things you just said resonate with me, but just as a tip to get liberals to hear your argument more, you can make, because what resonated with me was that all of this is creating an unfair restriction on who then has access. We're saying that only the wealthiest X percentage are able to actually exercise what we as a society, rightly, wrongly, like it, lump it, have agreed is a fundamental right, which is to own a firearm. And so as soon as you start creating economic barriers to doing that, in the same way that we as liberals argue against a lot of the, like, you have to have photo ID for voter registration and that sort of thing, because it creates an economic barrier from exercising your right to vote, creating economic barriers. Like, I think it's the same the other way as well. So right. I think that, you know, you might get more traction.
I don't know. I mean, all right. So I'm going to push back a little bit here. Is it really that difficult to get a driver's license?
Is it really that difficult to get a safe? If you've got the economic wherewithal
if I don't have, I live on the second floor of an apartment. If I got a 600-pound safe that costs $3,000, they're not going to be able to get it up the stairs into my apartment. So that seems a little crazy. So now I can't live where I live because I have to have a gun safe because the government says I have to have it locked up.
You made the choice to have the gun.
Well, I understand. I think there has to be some responsibility for having firearms and keeping them so unauthorized people that don't have gun licenses, people that don't know anything about them, keeping them locked up so that they don't have access to it. That's fine. I don't have a problem with that, but I don't want the government to come in and say, hey, listen, you can't, you know, you have to do this our way, because we can have all these laws. I mean, I live in Massachusetts. We should switch states. I think that's what we should do.
With them kind of gal, Charlie. I'm good. I'm good right where I am. Besides, it's very cold where you live.
it does get a little chilly. It does. But I don't. I think with the responsibility of firearm ownership, with firearm ownership and with this right comes responsibility to teach your kids how to be safe with a firearm when they get to a certain age, to keep them locked up so people that shouldn't have access to it don't have access to it. I did gun safety with my kids when they were 4 and 5 years old, and gun safety was, I called it Nerf gun safety. Nerf gun safety is when my son had his friends over, they could get in Nerf gun fights all they wanted. I don't care. Don't shoot your mom and don't shoot your sister. They're not in a gunfight. Shoot the crap out of your buddies. Don't shoot your mom and your sister.
So we kind of chased some rabbits there, but we didn't get an answer to how... What is my 2-year-old in a gun owner's home who leaves an unsafe, unprotected weapon out?
Yep. So
what is the societal answer to that dilemma? Because I think that kind of boils down a lot of the fears and anxiety on both sides, right? Like that gun owner feels strongly that that's part of, he uses that weapon to protect himself and his family at night, that's his Second Amendment, right? I hear those things. I, as a mama, feel strongly that my child should not be in danger because you have left a weapon, a loaded firearm, out and about. And don't even say that doesn't happen, because it does, and you know it and I do. So, but it's the exception that proves the rule, and I get that. But I think that dilemma is kind of a lot of it all in one. So what do we do? How do we get past that?
So if your kids are, and this is only happened to me one time since I've been a gun owner. I've had one of my son's friends come over and say, hey, listen, Charlie, We know you're a gun guy. We know you're a gun instructor. Are all of the guns locked up in the house before our son comes over? Yeah. Are they all locked up? Are there any guns loaded? Yeah, there's a gun loaded. It's the gun that's on me. They're like, oh my God, you have a gun on you? Yeah, I just came from Walmart. I'm going to keep the gun on me. It's in a holster. It's concealed. It's fine. It's not a big deal.
Makes sense.
So if you've got a neighbor, first of all, if you've got a neighbor that's a lunatic that says they're going to shoot you in the face, you might not want to go over there. There's always that option as well. Don't send your kids over there. But
all lunatics self-label that way. And definitions of lunatics vary from household to household. So, I live in Texas. So there's a very high percentage of people that own weapons.
Sure.
And so I guess is what you're saying, that it's my job anytime my kid goes anywhere before we walk in the door to say, just want to confirm, are you a gun owner? Yes or no? And if so, is everything locked up? Like, is that
that's I don't know if it's the solution. It's certainly a solution. I don't want the government to come and take our guns from everybody at all. But if you're going to someone's house and say, hey, listen, you know what? I know you're a gun owner. Is everything locked and secured before we leave my kid here for a couple hours? Oh my God, absolutely. Everything's locked and secured. Because what it really is you're taking the responsibility for your kid's safety by asking someone else, hey, are there any unsecured firearms in the house?
I get that. But like, as a parent, like, you've got kids. Mm-hmm. You don't walk into somebody's home. You've been invited over for a barbecue. You're hanging out. Before my family and I enter your home, could you please complete the following safety questionnaire? Like, you don't do that.
Right, you don't.
Obstacles that they could possibly reach. Do you have, like, you don't. You assume that people have behaved with a general level of responsibility, right?
Sure.
And so that is kind of my assumption about firearms as well, but it's scary for me that what you are saying is a reasonable level of security with firearms, which is what I would agree with, which is that if it's not on your body, it's locked and secured somewhere else. So that you don't just have loaded weapons lying about the place. Like, that's a terror.
Sure, yeah.
Everybody agrees with that. So, and it's contentious and divisive to even ask. How do we get past it? And I know that you're not like the policy guy that's in charge of fixing the
right,
world, but, you know.
Right. I guess I'm going to say it's up to the people in the house. I have some friends. They're close enough friends that I call them surrogate family. I lived with them for a few months when I was a young young guy moving back to Massachusetts, and I actually I traveled to Europe with the parents for a little vacation, working vacation. To Poland, and they're very liberal. They're very anti-gun, and they have said to me, when you come over, can you not bring any guns? I said, sure, I'll just bring knives. That'll be fine. I'll leave the guns in the car. Not a big deal. One of them actually asked me. She's like, so we want you to come to our wedding. We want you to bring a date. Can you not bring any guns? Sure. You want me just to leave it in the car? It seems a little more unsecure if it's in the car than if it's on me, right? And honestly, I hardly talk to them. I see them maybe once a year for the, for Christmas or Thanksgiving. They'll have me over every couple of years or so. But they don't have a problem asking, if you're coming into our house, can you make sure you leave your guns? Sure. It seems completely ridiculous, but whatever. If that makes you happy, that's fine. On the flip side, I would never say to them when they come in the house, hey, you're coming in our house. Can you put a gun on for me? You know?
I do think that there's a decided difference between those two things, though. Like, I get the humor of it, but there is a very big difference between asking somebody who is untrained and uncomfortable to engage with something as opposed to asking somebody to abstain from something.
Right.
Like, you know, hey, we're vegetarians. I know you're not, but are you okay with us having a vegetarian dinner in my household? Is very different from, well, you may be a vegetarian at your house, but here's a cheeseburger. You're at my house now. Do you know what I mean? Like,
right. I hear you. I hear you, but it's one of these, I think it's one of these things like, okay, so I have to live by your rules in your house, but you don't have to live by my rules in my house. How come I can't not obey your rules in your house? I'm not going to hurt you. I'm not a crazy person. I'm not going to harm anyone. My gun's not going to go off. It's secured. It's in a holster. It's,
and I hear all of those things, but I would feel uncomfortable if somebody came in to my home wearing a weapon. And I live in Texas. So Lord knows, like, anytime you engage with anybody, you just have to enter any engagement assuming that they have a concealed firearm on them, because they can't. Sure. And so, but that is, like, I would feel uncomfortable with somebody walking around in my home, because you, Charlie, if you walked into my home carrying with a weapon, I'd be like, ugh, Charlie, what are you fucking do? Right? Like, I wouldn't agree right. with it, but I now, like, I know enough about you to know that you would be safe. You would be handling that safely. Random dude coming in, I don't know you.
Right.
Plumber comes in with a piece, like, I don't know you. You could be a crazy person who also moonlights as a plumber. I don't know. I don't feel comfortable in that situation. And I think that that's kind of legit.
Sure. I hear you. I get you. I just had something I know where I was thinking. This, to me, this is where the whole an armed society is a polite society thing. I carry a gun to be able to protect me and my kids. And honestly, that is the end of my little circle of people I have to protect. It's me, it's my son, it's my daughter. I'm not going to go someplace and carry a gun and be a chump because get in people's faces and get drunk and flirt with guys' wives and cause trouble. And I'm not going to do any of that because I carry a gun on me and I don't want to do something to make this guy mad, because maybe he's crazy, maybe he's not crazy. I mean, who knows? Who knows? I'm not going to do anything to him in hopes that he doesn't turn around and pull a gun on me. So I drive much less aggressively than I used to. I still drive. I don't want to say I drive fast, but I keep up with traffic. and I don't tailgate people. I don't flip anyone off. When somebody cuts me off, I say bad things about their mother. And I've calmed down a lot less because I carry a firearm on me, and it's
you
not
everyone.
What's that?
But you are not everyone.
Oh, sure, I'm not everyone. And
that mature of a engagement with it. So maybe the issue is that we need to have tests and standards for maturity. Like, what is your take on that? Like, that's one of the things that people argue about a lot. Like, maybe we shouldn't let people with criminal records have firearms. Maybe we shouldn't let people who are mentally unstable have firearms. What is your take on those kind of sensible boundaries?
So my take on the sensible boundaries is I'm a sensible person until I'm not a sensible person. And I'm going to pass background checks. I'm going to pass background checks. I haven't committed any crimes. I don't have any DUIs. I don't have a restraining order. I don't have any of that stuff against me until something possibly sets me off. I don't know if it's possible to judge when someone's going to lose it. Maybe there are tells, and maybe there are some red flags, to use the vernacular. Maybe there are some red flags that go off and let people know that they're going to lose their shit. But for the most part, you can't really tell.
You can have all of it, but surely if we have, Bobby McViolence over here, who has a known pattern of violent behavior, maybe put this out there, maybe we don't give him a gun.
Sure, I hear you. If he still has a pattern of violence, he can still beat the crap out of someone with a baseball bat, with the leg of a bar stool, with a chain, with a crowbar. He could smash someone in the head with a hammer.
You don't have to make it easier.
Sure. What's that?
We don't have to make it easier. And all of those things are
it's still
personal, not at a distance. I can kill you much further away with a firearm than I can with a bar stool.
You can, but I think there's less likely a chance that you're going to get shot from a long distance than you are to get shot close up. Most responsible firearm owners,
responsible ones. We're right now talking about people who are intentionally irresponsible.
Right. So the people that are intentionally irresponsible, you can't do anything about them unless we start killing anyone that's irresponsible.
Well, I mean,
You
when
know
you
what I mean?
harder, I mean, come on. Like,
So
in the same
it's.
way that I'm not saying you shouldn't have a weapon, but we've already agreed that, it would be reasonable to have your weapon stored safely, right? Like, if we know that we never know when people are going to snap and become you're unable to make smart choices. But once we have established that somebody is, surely just like due diligence and make it would make sense to restrict that. Help me understand why not? Because I really just don't get this kind of fundamentally. I hear what you're saying, that there will always be people that slip through every system that we do, right? Like,
Right.
I also understand what you're saying, that if, again, Bobby McViolence is determined to get a gun, he can go get one. Surely we can make it a little bit harder. Like,
That's, see, this is the key. I did this with one of my anti-gun musicians that I used to gig with. And he says he calls me a right-wing nut, and I said he's a left-wing nut. He said he's a centrist, and I said I'm a centrist too. So we can both play these games. What I did with him, we were talking about background checks, and he's like, gun stores don't do background checks. They'll just give a gun to anybody. I said, I'll tell you what, man.
they will in
I'm
Texas.
gonna, I said I'm gonna give you $1,000. I'm gonna give you 10 $100 bills. We're gonna go into a gun store together, and you can buy a gun. You can buy a $200 gun and keep $800. You can buy a $500 gun and keep $500, or you can buy a $1,000 gun. I'm buying you your first gun. I'm giving you $1,000 to do it. We have to do this together. Well, I'm not going to go do that. Why not? Well, I'm not going to do it. That's crazy. That's ridiculous. No. You say that gun stores don't do background checks. Every gun store, if they have a federal firearms license, they have to do a background check on people. It's a federal law to say they have to do this. And if they don't, then they're breaking the law. Now, what do you do to stop people from breaking the law? I don't know. Kill them? I mean, what's the good answer? How do you stop people from
Get it.
speeding? You start to shoot speeders. So can you know if people aren't gonna we have a legal way for people to get firearms. We can't get we I'm gonna say air quotes, we can get guns through the mail, but it has to go from a dealer out of state to a dealer in state, and then that dealer has to do a background check on you. Some states have it, so if you have a gun license, you've already been through a background check. Well, how many background checks do we have to go through to make sure someone's a law-abiding citizen? So I go through two background checks every time I have to renew my license. If I did something to prevent myself from being a person that's going to pass a background check, then they're going to take my gun license and take my guns away from me because I got a DUI. Okay, so I can't go into a gun store. I'm going to fill out the federal form. They're going to do a background check. They're going to say, "Oh, geez, you've got a DUI. You're a prohibited person. You can't get a gun." Okay, so now I have to, now it has to be harder for me. I have to go find one from someone to and buy it illegally on the street.
Sure, but
You know?
I hear all the things you're saying, but like you, I think we're at an impasse because I think we feel like we're kind of going circular. That like you've made like you have your argument, and I hear that. Obviously, I don't agree, but I hear it, and I think
Yeah.
that maybe the more interesting thing to shift the conversation to now is. So, how do we achieve this dialogue, Charlie? How do we get people who, like you and I, feel slightly differently on these issues to sit down and have a good-natured, like, actually come to the table and talk about it? Like, why aren't we able to do that? It seems like, as grown-ups, that should be a thing we can do.
It certainly should be a thing we can do, but I think the issue is not getting to the table and not talking and not hashing it out. I think the pro-gun, we got the pro-gun folks and the anti-gun folks. The anti-gun folks just want to take. They want to take magazine restrictions. They want to take AR-15s. They want to take one gun a month. They want to take. Or they want to have one gun a month. They want to take ammo restrictions. You shouldn't be able to have this gun. You shouldn't be able to have this gun. You shouldn't take one here. You shouldn't take one there. And the pro-gun folks are all like, "Hey, listen, what do we get in return? If we give, if we say it's okay to, we'll go with only 10-round magazines. What do we get in return for this? Can you bring a gun to Texas?" They say, "Well, no, you can't do that either. States have their rights." Well, okay, so all the anti-gun folks want to do is they just want to take things. We call it the salami method. take a little of this, and then take this, and 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 then we have nothing left. And the pro-gun folks are just like, yeah, we're not getting anything out of this. All we're doing is giving. All you're doing is taking, and you're telling us that we're bad people because I want to have high cap magazines, or I want to have a magazine that holds more than 10 rounds of ammunition. But you're assuming I'm some sort of a murderer because I have one of these, and that's just not right. It's just not going to work out that way.
So I think that's one of my big bugbears on this whole issue, is I feel like there's a lot of name calling on both sides, right? Mm-hmm. That like the left wing side is really bad about calling gun aficionados gun nuts and all of the others. And I'm sure you probably have a better vocabulary of all of those things than I do.
Right.
And then on the other side, we get snowflakes and libtards and a whole list of other things that we get called. So I don't understand where, as a culture, we went from having what to me seems like really we're all kind of on the same side, right? Like we all agree that the Constitution's a good thing. We should all have access to our rights. But that we also want to have a safe society. You've got kids. You don't want your kids getting mowed down at a park or a school or anywhere else. You've been a teacher. Your heart has to go out to every teacher who says, I need to have a Kevlar vest in case. Like, that is heartbreaking. We all want that stuff fixed. And I don't understand genuinely what has happened that means that we can't sit down and say, we all want those things. Let's figure out a way to achieve that. And instead, we devolve into fear-mongering and name-calling and all of this other stuff. Like, why do you, because you've been doing a lot of work to try to build up the PR, and, you know, gun owners are human beings who are not out to get you. Where do you think this comes from, this devolution in the dialogue? Where is it from?
I think a lot of it comes from the non-gun folks don't know how these things work. And what we get is that a gun's no more good or evil. It's just a tool.
That's right.
It's just a tool. So the bad guys we're just using generic terms here. The bad guys are going to get guns, and they're going to do bad things. And we think that the good guys should be able to protect themselves, and that they have the right to be able to protect themselves, and they should be able to have whatever they want to protect themselves. But it's hard to do this when people don't see eye to eye on this, because whether it's coming from my side or from your side, when you say, well, people shouldn't have guns because there's murderers. Okay, but I'm not one of them. It's like me saying, hey, listen, you know what? I'm a single man. I've had a couple failed relationships. I think all women are crazy bitches, and I'm not going to deal with any of them, right? But yeah, do you know what I mean? It's like me casting a dispersion on all of women because I've had a couple of relationships that didn't go well, and they were good for a while, and then they weren't good for a while, and then they went bad, and someone said, you know, enough is enough, we're out of this. So I don't know. It's a lot of it has to do with I want you to have what you want to have that makes you happy, and I want to have what I want to have that makes me happy. And if not having a gun makes you happy, that's totally cool. And if having a gun makes me happy, that's totally cool too. And the part of what I want to do is I want to show people that own guns are just like everybody else. And I'm, like I said, I don't want to say a better person or a nicer person, but I'm better and nicer because I carry a gun, because I don't want to get
confident in your own skin, and it makes you more able to be your best self with that. Respect that.
Yeah, it makes me say, you know what? I'm not going to do anything. I'm not going to have too much to drink when I go out because I don't want to lose my license. And I know not everybody is that way. And that's, you know, that's okay too. If somebody wants to have too much to drink and they carry a gun, okay, that's a dumb idea, but you're free to make stupid choices. And
that's one of the many blessings of this country. You can be as stupid as you want to be.
Right. It's not yet illegal to be stupid yet.
I know. No. But I do like that is the piece for me, I think, that is the hardest, is not that we disagree. We're going to disagree on everything. I want us to live in a culture where we disagree on stuff because it means people are thinking for themselves and coming up with different opinions, right? Like, I love it when you have a topic where you ask 50 people and you get 100 opinions personally. What I don't like is that we're at this place where everybody is so defensive that they're just foreclosed. I'm not going to talk about anything related to this, or I'm not going to have that conversation. And it just devolves. So I have family members who are the complete opposite end of the aisle. And even my grandfather, I cannot have these conversations with because he just starts shouting names at me. And I'm like, you've my grandfather. I'm being respectful and being loving.
Right.
Like, I'm like, dude. And he's like, you damn snowflakes just don't understand. I'm like, you don't even own a gun, granddaddy. Come on.
That's
But like, no, the
the
best part, Charlie, the
best
best part. My grandfather is 100% Native American, Comanche, and had all of the disadvantages that you can imagine that come
part.
with that, right? As a kid. And because of that, he spent a lot of his life trying to pass for white because there were stigmas and that sort of thing. So, this is the funny part. It does get funny. He will go off on these soapboxy tirades about immigrants coming to this country to steal our jobs. I'm like, I mean, honestly, when the Native American guy starts complaining about immigrants, I kind of feel like he's not wrong. He
Right.
sees no irony, though. He does not find it to be funny. I find it to be hilarious. I'm like,
My gosh.
you know what? That's fair. If the old Comanche dude wants to sit and scream about immigrants, I think he's
Right.
earned that right.
He probably has.
So my point is that, like, for some reason, there's a few topics in our culture right now that we can still have a rational discourse about and agree to disagree. But man, it feels like they're fewer and fewer and farther and further between. And I don't get it. Like, I don't know where this came from, and it makes everything harder and worse. I want to have our legislators be able to sit down and have a rational discussion about, okay, you're right. You have a right to hold a gun. Now let's find a way to make it safe so that we keep guns from being easily accessible to bad guys. You would come to that discussion. Like, that's not a, you know what I mean? Like, I don't, how do we diffuse the hostility, I guess?
Right. I'm not sure how we diffuse the hostility. While you were talking, I was just thinking of one of my friends. I spent 10 years in a Motown disco funk band. One of my roommate when we traveled on the road was this little Jamaican dude. I might have mentioned him earlier. His name was Mamat. Oh, he's the guy that I gave a thousand. I wanted to give $1,000 to, and go shopping, right? So we just called him Maman because he called everybody Maman. Hey, Maman. Hey, Mr. Cook. We shared airplanes together, like numerous car rides. We shared hotel rooms up and down the East Coast and in Aruba and Florida and every place. And the last time he and I spoke was it was a few years ago. It was after a mass shooting someplace, and we were talking about background checks and all the nonsense about all of this. And I said, how many background checks do I have to go through, Maman, to prove to you that people that have gun licenses are law-abiding people, and they're not, like, they're jumping through the hoops to get gun license to do all this stuff. And I said, I have to go through a background check for my mass gun license. I have to go through the one for my Utah license. I have to go through one for my Utah instructor license. And with my job in schools, I have to go through a background check every year at 8 or 9 different schools. I said, I need like a fast pass for these things, like, And I said, how many background checks have you gone through? He's like, well, I haven't gone through any background checks. I said, well, why not? Like, you haven't passed a background check. You could be a criminal. Well, I'm not a criminal. Oh, but you could be because you haven't passed a background check. Well, why are you talking to me like this? Why do you think I'm a criminal? You're talking to me like I'm a criminal, man. I'm giving everything back to you that you're giving to me. You're telling me I've got to jump through all these hoops to make you happy. You haven't jumped through any of the same hoops. And I don't remember if I hung up on him or he hung up on me, but we haven't talked since then. And I'm like, okay, so you're, I'm not
gonna, lifelong friendship. That's the kind of thing I'm talking about. Like, that's insane.
It completely is. But my attitude is, all right, well, hey, listen, man, I've got other stuff I got to keep doing. You know, I've got other stuff I got to do. And if he doesn't want to be friends, he doesn't want to be friends. That's fine. I'm not going to hold it against him. If he called me up, I'd be, hey, it's great to talk to you, Maman. What's going on? What's new and exciting? But he doesn't want to talk about this stuff. And the other folks I was talking about, my surrogate family, they don't want to hear about any of this stuff. I've done a lot of cool things. I've got a podcast YouTube channel, and I've done a lot of really cool things with it. And because of it, I don't bring any of it up to these people. They don't want to hear about it. What are you doing? I'm going down to hang out at some big name's house, and I'm doing a bunch of radio shows, and I've been on some TV doing this and doing that, and just plugging away at life.
Now, see, that beats my heart, because that is, I think, exactly how can it be? Like, it bothers me that we're at a divisive enough place that you can't talk to family, that I can't have, you know, an agree to disagree with my family. You've lost friend, like lifelong friends, over something that is ultimately shades of gray in an opinion. And that, I remember as a kid, every Thanksgiving dinner table, everyone erupted into somebody disagreeing about something. Like, that's the tradition, right? If you don't have at least one fight, you've done Thanksgiving wrong.
Right, a couple glasses of wine and maybe a whiskey, and then somebody's arguing about God knows what.
See, in my house, it was usually football or, you know, something, right?
Yeah.
But now it feels like, but at the end of Thanksgiving, like on Black Friday, everybody was sat around watching football and it was okay. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we all came back to the place of love. We all came back to remembering that however we disagree about topics, we're all ultimately on the same team. Mm. And I think that's, for me, what we are missing. Like, we need to find a place to come back to the member that we are all ultimately on the same team, which is the American team, right? We need to come back to a place of love where we can say, hey, Charlie, I want you to feel safe. I want you to be able to, you know, live your best life. I just need my kids to be safe too. And you'd be like, hey, Michelle, that seems reasonable. Let's find a way that we can make this happen. We extrapolate this. Let's find policies where everybody can feel that way. Like, that's what I would love to see happen. And I'm so frustrated. And I don't know if you feel this way, but I feel like our leaders and our media and all of that feeds this fuel, but that then people buy into that as well, that there is a lot of buy-in to the let's have a war rather than let's find a path together. Does that make sense?
I think it does, yeah. I do think that politicians and the media certainly feed off all of this. Mm-hmm. And I haven't had cable TV for 10 years, and I still know what's going on a lot of times with politics, and know what's, you know, what's going on around the country and things that are going on. So I don't, you know, I haven't watched Fox News and I haven't watched CNN, and I don't watch sports. So that's, I don't want to say I've insulated myself from that stuff, but I don't partake in it. So there's not, I don't want to say they don't have an influence on me, but I'm not worried about all that stuff. And to me, my thing is to keep myself happy, and to keep myself going, and to work on the things that I want to do, and to set my goals and work on achieving them and all that sort of stuff. So I'm not going to let that other stuff bother me. You know, yes, I don't like this. Yes, I don't like that. I don't like this person. If there's an actor that comes out that I don't really care for, that does something stupid, you know what? I don't go to their movies. You know, if somebody else does it, that's cool, man. Like, that's totally cool. So,
but you and I both have platforms. And so it's our job to use them responsibly. Your platform, arguably substantially bigger than my platform at the in some ways.
It's,
my platform is very different. Mine's a very businessy platform.
Right.
But so What does that look like from our responsibility? What should we be doing that encourages people to, I don't, for the record, have cable TV or, and I don't watch CNN or Fox News or any of that either. We have our opinions, but you know, here we are having a rational grown-up conversation. What should we be doing with our platforms to encourage people to do the same thing? What does that look like?
I guess what I do is my show is called Running Shotgun with Charlie. Yep. And I interview people in the car as we talk about gun stuff and gun issues. You know, I took it right from the stagecoach where I'm driving in the car and the other person's a passenger and they're in the shotgun seat. And, you know, I've been a gun instructor for a long time and I thought it'd be cool to talk to gun folks. Realistically, I would watch Carpool Karaoke and I would see James Corden and I'm like, hey, he's a chubby guy and he's English and I'm a chubby guy and I can speak English. I can do what he's doing, right?
It should be pretty. Because I feel like there should be a lot of musical theater, like Annie, get your gun kind of moment.
Okay. This is what I love about it. I had somebody ask me, they're like, hey, you should come out and we should do a show riding on motorcycles. And I was like, I don't know how to ride a motorcycle. And she's like, okay, you'll ride bitch. And I'm like, I don't know if I want to do that either. So I have since learned how to ride a motorcycle. But
that's dedication to your art, Charlie, right there. I learned to ride a motorcycle.
I've learned to ride a motorcycle, absolutely. And I have some that are family motorcycles that are getting repaired, so I can ride them. What I like about my platform is I can do it for anything. You know what I mean? If it's to me with talking to someone in a car, it's you're having an intimate conversation when you're going someplace, and it's not a Zoom conversation. It's not a phone conversation. It's two people in a car and somebody watching the show is just they're a fly on the rear view mirror. Mm-hmm. And I came with, you know, I worked on this, I guess I worked on it in my head because my son would talk to me a little bit more when we were in the car and we didn't have to look at each other and talk. So I'm like, this is really cool. How can I translate this into something cool for me? So when I've had all sorts of people on my show. I've had guys and gals. I've had these women from this group called the DC Project, and they go to Washington DC to talk to legislators. Obviously I've had guys and gals. I've had a couple of transgender folks. I've had some black people. I've had black women in the in the car. I've had, oh my gosh, I've had a couple of liberal people in the car as well. And we all, we're all pro-gun folks. Some of the people are instructors. Some of the people are activists. Some of the people are authors. Some of the people were robbed. And one guy was held up at gunpoint outside of his garage. Another guy was robbed on his own property. And he said, hey, this is enough. I've got to get a gun to be able to protect myself. And I just want to get people out there to see that that gun owners aren't all these crazy lunatic fringes. We're not all the hunters with camouflage, and we call them FUDs. We're not all, you know, Elmer FUDs with camouflage and hunter orange that just want to go duck hunting and dove hunting. And we're just regular folks. You know, one of my favorite interviews is a husband and wife team that own a gun store in Arizona. And I had them on a show recently. I piled a bunch of people in a car in Florida, and I brought something up about the store, and she looked in her husband's eyes, and I'm like, oh my God, she's in her 50s and she still looks at her husband with goo goo eyes. Like, this gets me, you know what I mean? These are just regular people. And yeah. I think that's what I really want to get out. And I don't edit much. I edit my shows in video. So I edit from camera to camera, but I don't, you know, I'm not cutting things up and slicing things up. It's a conversation between two cars, between two people in a car. And it's an honest conversation about guns and the issues that are going on. And sometimes it's gun laws that are that happen in people's own states. And it's just a good time. It's just two people talking. That's all.
I've watched several episodes of Running Shotgun with Charlie, and I really
enjoy it. Thank you.
So like I absolutely, like, you don't have to sell me. I'm sold. So I think that it's, which is part of why you're here, because I do, I love the premise. I love the dialogues that you have. I like the fact that in those, you talk about things that I think most people don't think about in terms of the nuance. Like you had one where you, guy who has, I think, a podcast called A Black Guy with a Gun or something like that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Ken Blanchard, The Black Man with a Gun.
Black Man with a Gun. And so he's talking about, like, that's a different relationship with society than
absolutely.
The white guy with a gun. And I love all of those things. So I feel like you're doing a great job using your platform to dispel some of those myths on that side. And if you think of a magical fix to bringing everybody together to the same table, let me know, Charlie, and I'm in. I got your back.
Awesome.
And we are out of time, but is there anything that we haven't talked about that we need to? Obviously, we will have all the links to Riding Shotgun with Charlie, et cetera. And I really encourage people to go and watch and enjoy your stories because they are great conversations. But is there anything else that you want to talk about before we go?
I don't think so. We talked about a lot of really good stuff here. Like I said, my show is called Riding Shotgun with Charlie, and I've put the show out in video on YouTube, and I put it out on a couple of other places. One of them is called the Ops Lens. It's on the Ops Lens app, and I put the audio out as a podcast so people can listen to it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and on iHeartRadio. And you know, to me, gun ownership is just a lot of good, clean fun. I don't know if I told you this. I make videos playing the trumpet and shooting a gun at the same time. Did I tell you this?
Oh.
This is a whole other a whole other thing. Yeah. I call these videos Gungrams, Gungram.
Okay.
I've got over 250 of these on YouTube, and they've been watched 20 million times all over the world.
That is amazing.
So, yeah, I did a couple of videos over the weekend for like some people in Germany. So they send me money. They tell me what they want to say. They tell me what song they want to do. I learn a song. I go out. I play it. I make a video. And, you know,
I will put the links in the show notes as well, and also check that out because now I'm intrigued.
Yeah, it's fun working in video because you can, you know, I didn't know anything about video, so it was all a learning process and how to add pictures and stills and separate the audio from the video and put in different pictures and images and stuff. And that's a lot of fun too. It's a side, you know. I know it's a flash in the pan and it's cool and you know, right. It comes and goes, but yeah.
Hey, you know what? If everybody that comes to the table is as reasonable as you, then I think we're gonna be better off, Charlie.
I think so. This has been great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you so much for joining me. And like I said, all of your contact details and everything will be in the show notes. If you get tired of the Boston cold, I'm just saying I could do with some more reasonable gun owning neighbors. So there are plenty of houses available in the neighborhood. Just, you know, give me a shout.
I will. I am thinking of moving.
We'll talk offline.
All right. We'll talk offline.
All right. Thanks, Charlie. Thank Bye. You. You've been listening to Hey, I Want Your Job. For more information on how you can get your own awesome job, visit ONH Consulting at www.onhconsulting.com. We offer incredible resumes, no-nonsense career advice, and real-world tips for landing a job in today's market. Check us out on LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, and Insta for more insider information. Soon, you'll be hearing us say, I'm Michelle Olivier, and hey, I want your job.